This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We're asking for your help with a very simple question this hour. Well, the question is simple. Opinions differ on the simplicity or complexity of the answer. But we really are looking for your insight on this issue. Most everyone has an opinion on this, so ready for the question? Okay, here it is. Why are there poor people in America? I was pausing there to give you time to decide on your answer. We do have someone with us who's been investigating answers to this question for more than 15 years. Harlan Beckley from the Shepherd Program for the Interdisciplinary Study of Poverty and Human Capability. The Dr. Reverend Beckley has much to tell us about his findings, but yours will be most welcome too, right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Our main question this hour, why are there poor people in America? If you have an answer, please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Some related questions we'll also be trying to address. What causes poverty? How can you get out of it? Is there help that works that doesn't? If you have thoughts on any of these or related questions of your own, by phone, we are at 888-967-2825, or you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Our first guest has served for 15 years now as the head of a center that investigates poverty, encourages better understanding of it, and looks for solutions. Based at Washington and Lee University, it is called the Shepherd Program, and its director is the Reverend Dr. Harlan Barkley. Harlan Beckley? Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Harlan.
That's all right.
I was just so excited. It's great to have you back in the Insight Studios. It's been years.
Thank you, Tom, for the invitation to be here. I'm very happy to have an opportunity to talk about this important subject.
So why are there poor people in America?
I'm not sure the question is why there are poor people in America. There are poor people everywhere, and there always have been. Wise men once said that you will always have the poor with you. But the question is, why are there so many poor people in America? And when we look at the data, we find that in the United States, we have more poor people by almost any count than any other developed nation in the world. We can see that from our official poverty rate, which is now at 15.1% of the population. We can see it from the number of children. 22% of our children live in homes below the poverty line, which would be $22,000 for a household of four. And if we compare that to other nations, we see, for example, in a recent United Nations Children's Defense Fund study, that the United States ranks 34th in terms of the number of children in poverty in households, just behind Latvia and just ahead of Romania. So there, not only are there a lot of poor people in America, there are a lot of poor children in America, and that's a travesty.
Repeat this for me, if you would, Harlan. The U.S. compares to Romania how?
We have about, by this study, which is a little different measurement than our official poverty measurement, 23%+ of the children in the U.S. live in households that are below the poverty line, a poverty line. And in Romania, it's about 25%, and in Latvia, it's about 23%. In Iceland, I think it's about 4%.
So when it comes to other quote-unquote developed countries in the world, when you look at the number of children in those different societies living in poverty, the U.S. ranks not only near the bottom, but about the same as Latvia and Romania.
We're right between Latvia and Romania in this United Nations Children's Study.
But,
yes.
But why?
Lots of reasons. And may I add, first of all, that not only are income measurements one way of comparing ourselves to other nations, we can also look at healthcare outcomes like infant mortality, where we rank just between the Czech Republic. I can remember when there was a Soviet Union. and Poland. When we look at our mortality lifespan, we rank very close to Costa Rica in the number of years that Americans are expected to live, which Costa Rica has a much lower per capita income than we do. When you look at the gap in education between people of higher socioeconomic background and lower, we have a bigger gap than almost any other country. So there are a lot of
measures. So it's part of what you're telling us here, Harlan Beckley, is that when you look at those countries that in many ways Americans feel like we're somewhat on an even keel, maybe in terms of our economy, a little bit better than Germany or Switzerland or Great Britain or the Netherlands or Japan, is that all of those major developed countries are doing far, far better at helping people stay out of poverty?
They're doing far, far better by almost any measurement. Education, healthcare, health, and income are different measurements, and they're doing better in almost each of these areas than the United States. And our GDP is the highest of most. Well, it's about the same as Norway, which is very high. So our GDP is higher than almost any of these other countries, and particularly higher than Latvia and Romania.
And I really don't mean this as a facetious question. I think implied in this primary question we're trying to address this hour, why are there poor people in America? There's an implication here that we have had tremendous success as a nation, as a democracy, as a place of innovation, as a place where there is great wealth and success. We have a president of the United States today who not only is African-American, but was raised largely by a single mom who struggled. I don't know if they were actually below the poverty line at times, but certainly they were close. So we have those kinds of up from the bootstrap stories of success, but we still have this huge pool of people poor in a nation that's not only perhaps the wealthiest nation in the history of the world, but has been able to succeed at such things as putting people on the moon and curing polio and sending spaceships outside of our solar system. Why can't we solve poverty?
That's a good question. And one of the reasons is because our income distribution is unequal. Why is that? It's for a lot of reasons. It has to do with labor markets. It has to do with education. It has to do with provision for health care. It has to do with family composition. It has to do with neighborhoods. And what we do, we don't understand completely how poverty can be diminished. But we do know that there have been periods in our history in which we have diminished poverty, for example, in the 60s. And we do know that there are some policies that are quite effective. For example, we do know that an earned income tax credit helps working families to reduce poverty by about 2%. Because we have that policy in place, we have 2% lower poverty rate than we otherwise would have had. So we know some things are successful. This is a problem that can be dealt with, and we know that, and we're looking for ways, more better ways, to reduce poverty in the United States so that these figures don't tell a story that's so shameful for our country.
Harlan Beckley is director of the Shepherd Program at Washington and Lee University, and he is one of our guests. Also with us in the Insight Studio is a young man who is about to enter his senior year of undergraduate work at Washington and Lee. He first got interested in the Shepherd Program during his freshman year and has devoted much time since then to internships and on-site work at numerous locations, all having to do with efforts to more realistically understand poverty across the U.S. Joe Landry, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you so much, Tom, for having me.
Well, Mr. Landry, your last posting, I understand, was an internship at the Public Defender's Office in the District of Columbia?
That's correct.
What'd you learn there?
Well, I think I'm going to tell a story, Tom, if that's okay.
Sure. I love stories.
Of one of my encounters there. One of the things that we did at the Public Defender Service. Now, I worked in the Juvenile Services Program, and what we did there was we went into the juvenile detention facilities in the District of Columbia, and we worked with the youths who are incarcerated there. And that gave me a very unique and special opportunity to interact personally with many of the youths incarcerated there. And I wanted to tell a story about two of them. Now, I'm using pseudonyms just so everyone knows. This is a story about Josh and Tyler. Josh and Tyler are both African-American, as are most youths who are detained in these facilities in the District of Columbia. They are about 15 years old, so that gives some perspective on where they should be in terms of educational attainment and development. And they are both in this facility because of routine juvenile infractions, we'll say. Now, Josh happens to be gay also. Now, one of the questions that I like to ask these youths was, what do you want to do when you get out of here? Because I think that's the most important question for any youths who find themselves in this circumstance. These are 15-year-olds who often, from the age of 8 or 9, have had run-ins with the criminal justice system. And, you know, when you begin at that age, it's quite obvious, I think, that the circumstances leading up to that situation are out of the youth's control in many respects. And
out of their control, how? They were born into a poor family, a single parent family, a family with too many kids to take care of?
Yes,
you're
exactly.
Nodding your head. I take it this exactly. Could be all of the above and more.
In most of the times, it was in this circumstance. I'm not speaking about poverty across the country, but my specific encounter with it in the District of Columbia, which has a very unique situation, and that I would characterize it as a lot of those.
So tell us more about Josh and Tyler.
Yeah, exactly. So Josh had just read Barack Obama's book, The Audacity of Hope. And he was so passionate about this book. He was so passionate about our president. And his dream was to go on to college and to major in politics and to pursue a career similar to what Barack Obama had achieved. And he didn't have any ideas that he would become president. He didn't think that that would happen. But he hoped that he could go to college and graduate and get a job in politics. Tyler, when I asked him what his ambitions were, he wanted to work in HVAC, which is heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. So it's a construction-type job. But Tyler had heard that HVAC, working in HVAC, would get you the opportunity to earn enough money to put food on the table for your family, maybe send your kids off to school, buy a nice car, maybe, and maybe even own your own home. And Josh and Tyler were both very passionate about their dreams. They were not very similar in terms of their personalities. Josh was a very bold, outspoken person. Tyler was much quieter and maybe had less lofty ideas. But what I realized coming out of this was that the chances of either one of them achieving those goals was pretty slim. Many of these youths who are detained in these facilities are going to repeatedly get in trouble with the criminal justice system, possibly go on to DC jail once they become adults. And I think it speaks to the importance.
So this one kid who might like to run for the U.S. Senate someday and another kid who would like to repair air conditioners, you feel their dreams are equally unattainable.
Joe, I wouldn't say equally unattainable, but I would say that they are both. Their chances of achieving those for them are slim.
And was it your perspective, Joe Landry, that these youngsters were in the situations that they were in because they were poor, that if they were born into middle-class families, they wouldn't have gone through any of this?
Well, the other question the professor wants to ask is, Joe, his student, is what does this tell us about mobility, which
exactly.
Tom was talking about earlier about the possibility of people working their way out of poverty in New York.
Well, Joe's going to have a minute to consider his answer to both those questions and whatever else he might want to talk about. Our discussion about poverty in America continues on Virginia Insight in just about 60 seconds. Joseph Landry expects to have his undergraduate degree in American history completed in less than a year. Then he plans to go on to law school, possibly to focus in public interest law. For some 3 years now, he has been studying poverty up close through work with the Shepherd Program at Washington and Lee University. Sitting next to Mr. Landry is the director of that program, Washington and Lee Religious Studies Professor Harlan Beckley. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Fundamental question we are trying to address this hour, why are there poor people in America? And we have some posts on Facebook that relate to this. Let's see. There's one here from Skyler who says, the chef gets to lick the icing from the bowl, but never gets a slice of cake, just enough to keep him getting up in the morning and going to work. Dr. Beckley, it sounds like Skyler is something of a poet there, but do you take something from what he's saying about assumptions regarding poverty?
I'm not quite sure what Skyler is suggesting with his comment.
Well, I'm going to take a guess at what Skyler's talking about, and I think it might be what Dr. Beckley was referring to earlier as a divergence in income inequality. We're having the lowest quintile and the highest quintile.
Quintile is 20%. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
So the lowest 20% of the population and the highest 20%
measured,
of the population.
Measured in this case by income levels. Yeah.
Yes, and they're moving further and further apart. In the post-World War II era, up until the 1970s, we had what we call the Great Compression, which is that productivity and wages across the spectrum grew together. And since that period, from the 1980s on, this is something that Timothy Noah in his new book, The Great Divergence, talks about. And since that period, these two quintiles have been growing apart. And so what we all often hear is that Americans need incentive to work, right? And so CEOs need incentive to go into the office and produce. But really, you also need incentive on the factory floor. You also need incentive as a cashier to go into work and to produce for the American economy. What we're seeing is that work is paying less and less for Americans, especially at the bottom of the income rungs. We've seen a decline in defined benefit pension plans. We've seen a decline in employer-provided health care, especially for those at the bottom of the income ladder. And so work is no longer really paying for those at the bottom when it once did. And that, I think, might be what Skyler's referring to in that.
That may be not the right incentive. It's not only let's go back to Joe's comments earlier in the program about Josh and Tyler and the lack of mobility that they probably have in their lives, unfortunately, and how we can restore that mobility.
And tell me what you mean by mobility.
That is the possibility for them to make it from the bottom quintile into the middle quintile.
Can I get you just to say 20%? Only because there are going to be people who tune in every once in a while who, like me, the first time they heard quintile probably don't know that it means.
How about just from poverty to middle income?
Okay.
How about that?
All right.
That's what we hope for Josh and Tyler, particularly, I believe it's for Tyler, who might be able to work in HVAC and have a modest car and a modest home. That's the hope. And there are a number of issues here, but one of the problems is incentives, and we find that the incentives for both in terms of income, salaries, and in terms of compensation, which Joe mentioned, having to do with health care, provision for health care and pensions, are not very good for the lowest level of income people, lowest quintile, as I said before.
Jennifer has a question here that looks to me like the flip side of what both of you are saying. So I want to ask you or tell you what she is asking and then ask for your
response. That's very fine.
This is on our Virginia Insight Facebook page. And if anybody else has joined us and wants to either post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as Virginia Insight, or reach us by phone for this conversation with Harlan Beckley and Joseph Landry from the Shepherd Program at Washington and Lee University, our phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. 888-967-2825. So Jennifer says, I know we are supposed to feel sorry for people who are down on their luck and believe that it is always through no fault of their own. But isn't it possible that there are those who would rather accept a handout than a hand up? didn't the welfare reform of the 1990s get a lot of people off the dole and back to work? I admit, when I see people begging on the street, I almost always try to give them at least a dollar or two. But I do wonder, how do you tell whose sad story is real and who is just trying to play us? Your reaction to that, Joe Landry?
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, this is a good point that Jennifer makes. And I think that what we want to say is that liberals, conservatives, all alike, want people working. You know, we don't want people who are dependent upon government assistance if they don't have to be. But what we need to ensure is that when people do go to work, they can find jobs that are able to grant them a living wage. So if you're going to work 40 hours a week, you should be able to pay for food for you and your family. You should be able to afford health insurance for yourself and your family. And you should be able to afford at least a minimal level of retirement for yourself.
May I add to that? We also need to be able to. We also need to provide the kind of health care people need, so they have a chance to function well in society, and the kind of education they must have in order to function well in society. And if we don't provide those things, then they have no opportunity to excel.
Are you talking about changes in government programs?
Talking about changes in government programs to a certain extent. But we're also talking about our educational system and our healthcare system.
One of the reasons I asked the question that way, Chairman Beckley, is I'm sure you know that there is a solid 25% of the American electorate today that identifies with Tea Party philosophies about government already being too intrusive in our lives and doing too much to help people when it ought to leave us alone. And depending on what questions get asked, the popularity of certain Tea Party philosophies get up around 40 or 50%. And certainly in terms of the popularity of the current health care law, which is being challenged in the U.S. Supreme Court, there is a majority of Americans who report that they think that's too intrusive in our lives. So what I'm curious about for both of you, if you're talking about needing to get more government involvement in ending poverty, how you're ever going to persuade people that's a good idea?
Well, it's not just government. It's also it's also people at the local level doing things that make a difference for in education and in health care.
You're talking about charity programs?
No, we're talking about clinics, we're talking about school systems and after-school programs, and we're talking about initiatives at the local level to make it possible for people to get credit so that they don't have to go to payday lenders to get credit. We're talking about a lot of things that can be happening that are not simply handout programs. They're programs that increase opportunities for people to function well in society. So that those things, but we also need to point out that the latest study by the Congressional Budget Office shows that we spend not more money now, but less money now than we did in the 70s and the 60s on government assistance that targets low-income people.
Joe,
so
I realize
we have
he's
reduced
your professor
our expenditures, not increased
and your mentor, but I know that you had several things you wanted to say, so please jump in.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to emphasize, Tom, that we're not only talking about steps that government needs to take. These are steps that individuals themselves can also take. We've seen a drastic decline in unionization in the United States over the same period where we've seen this divergence in income equality. And you know, that's one means by which individuals can take control of their own situation in the labor market and through the private labor market achieve a decent wage as well as the benefits that we've been talking about, such as health care and retirement benefits. If we're not going to rely on the public sector, as the United States uniquely has relied upon the private labor market to provide for individuals, and that's fine because the private labor market in many circumstances can provide the equality of opportunity that we strive for, but only if individuals through jobs at all levels of at all income levels can provide can achieve health care and retirement benefits and adequate nutrition and shelter.
The center's full name is the Shepherd Program for the Interdisciplinary Study of Poverty and Human Capability. It is based at Washington and Lee University. For the past 15 years, since the program first got underway, It has been directed by Harlan Beckley. Sitting next to Harlan, a rising senior at Washington and Lee, who's been studying poverty with Dr. Beckley and the Shepherd Program for some 3 years now. His name is Joe Landry. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. If you have thoughts about what causes poverty, about what would help people get out of it, about whether we could have more kinds of government programs that would help, or if you think government programs aimed at poverty just exacerbate the problem, we'd love to hear your perspective as well as your questions at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. We had a couple of questions for you before the last break, Joe Landry, about these two people that you've given the pseudonyms Josh and Tyler, and they were in juvenile detention while you were working with the Public Defender's Office in Washington, D.C. I forget the specific questions, Harlan, that we were trying to get Joe to ask before we were interrupted by the break, but I guess
One thing I'd like to emphasize is that, look, Josh and Tyler were here because they committed infractions, and they themselves did do that. And, you know, I don't mean to say that they are here totally because of societal factors that placed them there. Now, those societal factors did lead them along that path and make it more likely that they would end up there than somebody like I would end up there. But who had, you know, a stable family, who was provided with a decent education. I didn't come from wealth or by any means, but I had those things, which these individuals didn't have. But my hope for these individuals was that when they left, they would be able to achieve these dreams. And these are, you know, fairly minimal dreams for most of us. But for them, they're very big, and they would make a very important contribution to their future and to the communities in which they live. Now, if we invested money in jobs programs and college education or college preparatory programs for individuals like these, we might be spending less to keep them in these facilities that they're in and to watch them throughout their lives.
One of the ways to respond to Jennifer question earlier is that it is indeed the case that some people all of us have done this do not seize the opportunities that are available to us, and we find ourselves not functioning like we should be functioning. And clearly that was true of right. Josh and Tyler. Let me tell another story of a similar kind, and it illustrates the kind of opportunity that we can provide, and in this case provided by a nonprofit organization supported by some government grants. One of our students, 2 years older than Joe, worked at a clinic in Washington, D.C. called So Others Might Eat. One day she was in the clinic and a woman about 45 or 50 came in to talk with her, said, after she did an intake, said, I'm on crack and I'm prostituting myself to stay on crack and I want to get off. What can I do? This young lady was a 20-year-old from Beaumont, Texas, and they talked for 20 minutes. They cried together a little bit, and the young lady said, well, there is something that can happen because So Others Might Eat has an addiction clinic in West Virginia, and that addiction clinic makes it possible for you to go and spend 90 days there and to receive good rehabilitative care. So that was an opportunity for this 45-year-old woman to rejuvenate her life and renew her life and to begin again. Now, it wasn't the case that society made this happen to her, and not entirely at least. She contributed to it as well. But society ought to, most of us would say, offer her an opportunity to have another chance and to renew her life at that point. And that happens oftentimes when there are institutions, sometimes from government, sometimes from private initiatives, available to people to make it possible for them to rejuvenate their lives.
888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. If you want to talk with Harlan Beckley and Joe Landry, both associated with the Shepherd Program at Washington and Lee University. Vino in Winchester, thanks so much for calling in. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Well, how y'all doing this afternoon?
Good.
Excuse my little voice crack, and I have a little cold. My apologies. But what I'd like to say, if I could, is I come from a background of a welfare poverty, and almost three generations of welfare recipients. And the thing about it is that I've had the opportunity through the military and through choices I made in life not to die of drug addiction and being incarcerated, because I made decisions of bettering myself through educational programs available in the military and other educational programs that were later on afforded to me because of my stint in the military. So at this point that I've gotten an education, I'm a civil engineer these days, and I've been working at six-figure salaries, and that's not really my point, but my point is that part of it is that I made decisions not to live in that welfare type of mentality any longer, and still some of my family feels that this is an entitlement that they still deserve for some reason, even though they don't contribute, and that they actually do better on this welfare program because it's so abundant in money that if they went and got a job and a minimum wage, they couldn't survive. And so it's kind of a mixed bag there, but that's my comment, and I would gladly take any response to that offline and on the air.
May I respond? I think it's laudable that the gentleman was able to better himself in life, and his decisions were important ones, and we want to encourage those kind of decisions. I don't think that public policy should be aimed at keeping people on welfare for their entire lives. In fact, I happen to be one of the people who favors the Welfare Reform Act of 1996 in terms of making limiting available welfare for a period of time. But at the same time, if I may go back to the story of Josh and Tyler and the woman who came into the So Others Might Eat clinic, they are people who would not have the opportunity to improve their lives if there were not health care and educational and job training available to them to make it possible for them to be an HVAC worker or to go to college or to simply get off crack.
Yeah. Exactly, yes. And jobs programs and educational programs like our guest has taken advantage of,
Vino said he joined the military, and he's right. No longer on the line. Vino, thank you for your call.
But I think that
he felt he needed to make a change in attitude, different from the people that he was surrounded by when he was poor.
Sure, and the military made that possible, and I'm sure he got job training through the military, which made it possible for him to become a six-figure salary earner.
I think that he also referred to educational programs that along the way did enable him to make those next steps, and those are exactly the kind of programs that I think can help people move along out of poverty and that are the best ways or the best forms of government involvement in this area. And those programs that enable you to make the next step in your life to move along that path.
I think part of the question that so many people raise, that Jennifer raised in her Facebook post, that's implied by what Vino was saying, is what about people who don't seem to have the motivation to want to help themselves or have the attitude that there really is nothing they can do, so why try? I'd love to get your thoughts about that, as well as anybody listening. And we will have more on this question of why we have poor people in America when we continue on Virginia Insight in just about 1 minute. The center's full name is the Shepherd Program for the Interdisciplinary Study of Poverty and Human Capability. It is based at Washington and Lee University. For the past 15 years, since the program first got underway, its director has been Harlan Beckley. Sitting next to Harlan here in our Insight Studios, a rising senior at Washington and Lee, who has been studying poverty with Dr. Beckley and the Shepherd Program for some 3 years now. His name is Joe Landry. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. We should probably hear a little bit about what the Shepherd Program is and how we got to where the two of you are today with the efforts going on through Washington and Lee's involvement.
We would like to tell you a little bit about the Shepherd Program and about the Shepherd Consortium, which is a national consortium of schools, which is also focused on poverty studies. The Shepherd Program, and may I begin by saying Shepherd is a benefactor, not a metaphor. Tom and Nancy Shepherd from the Boston area are contributors to the Shepherd Program that made it possible. The Shepherd Program discusses the kind of questions that both Jennifer and Vino asked earlier, and the students discuss those questions and attempt to get a better sense of what causes poverty and what remedies can help to diminish poverty in the United States. It's never going to be the case that we will be able to end poverty. There are always going to be problems of motivation, but the problems of motivation are only part of the problem of poverty, and there are also barriers to people succeeding, and we want to remove those barriers, and we want to create opportunities. So the Shepherd Program students, and there are about 20 to 25 minors each year and about 100 students each year at Washington Lee who take a basic course here, and about 30 to 35 students who participate in internships for 8 weeks, like the one that Joe participated in with the D.C. Public Defenders. The purpose of the Shepherd Program is to help students who are going into law, education, business, healthcare, public policy, and a number of other fields to understand enough about poverty so that they will, through their professional work and through their civic initiatives and through their political involvement, be able to do something to diminish poverty in the United States and to help reduce the very high level of poverty that we face in the United States. Joe is just one example, one of about 20 to 25 in his class of students who are involved in this program. And now the program is expanding to other schools, and there are 14 schools currently, and we're getting larger all the time, and a National Shepherd Consortium in which poverty studies will become a part of higher education in these schools and offer the opportunity for students to enrich their majors with the study of poverty. So I'll let Joe talk a little bit about his own experience in that program, and I hope he'll say something about his research program on affordable housing in the Lexington area.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think one of the most innovative aspects of this program is the diversity of interests that combine within it. So in the classroom, you have liberals and conservatives. You have people from across, students from across the country who are studying, as Professor Beckley said, interests or areas from medicine to history to psychology, so forth. And they're all coming together to address this most important issue. And they bring a variety of perspectives on it from their own lives and from the very important community involvement side of the Shepherd Program, where we are interacting with people who are living in poverty and getting their stories and getting their perspectives on the issue and what needs to be done. This all converges, and we get it's just a very inspiring and beneficial convergence of ideas and opinions. And I don't think it really gives us a singular idea about what causes poverty or what exactly poverty is, even. We disagree on a lot of those issues, but the discussion is the important part of it.
Isn't the important part of it also what you learn when you spend time at places like the District of Columbia's
Absolutely.
Public Defender's Office, and there's some other locales where you spent time where poverty was an issue?
Yes. Well, I also worked in Worcester, Massachusetts at the Legal Aid Bureau, and I've worked in Rockbridge County on an affordable housing project, and this is community-based research. So what we do is we take a question from community members, from community leaders who want to know more about the issue of affordable housing in the area. And as college students, we invested the time that we had and the resources that we had from Washington Lee University into finding the answers to that question that the community had, into providing them, you know, beneficial pathways to improve their situation.
In this case, in terms of building housing?
In terms of what needed to be done in the housing situation in Rockbridge County.
So in these three different locales in Massachusetts and the District of Columbia and this effort for housing analysis in Rockbridge County, you're dealing with people who in some ways are different than you because of their upbringing, because of their finances?
Well, I mean, I think that we're all different. I wouldn't put them in a separate I don't think we want to put people in
well,
a unified class.
I didn't
class
mean or... to make it sound like I was putting them in the box. Okay. I apologize, Joe, if it came across that way. What I guess I'm wondering is if you had a sense of getting to know people whose experiences in their life, because of their personal economics, sure, were different than what you had experienced yourself.
Absolutely.
Their circumstances are certainly different.
Right.
So what I'm curious about is what that meant to you, what you got from it,
well,
and whether you're...
Sure. I think it's absolutely important because in the classroom, we are reading stories, we are reading personal accounts of, or journalistic accounts of poverty, and it puts a human face on it that I think is really important. But it's when you go out into the community and you actually interact with individuals who are living in these circumstances, and, you know, the poor in America are urban, they're rural, they're black and white, they're not unified by these demographics. And
so what I'm curious about, Joe, is if you met people who surprised you.
Definitely. I think that a lot of the individuals you encounter have opinions about what needs to be done with this situation, and they're all different.
What about Josh and Tyler? How did they surprise you, Joe?
Well, Josh and Tyler, you know, they had very similar ambitions to myself. I want to go to college, and, you know, I read Barack Obama's book, I thought I wanted to major in politics, which I didn't end up doing, but close enough, American history.
There are people who we've had on this program before, and I think one of them was a Washington and Lee professor, who have said something along the lines of, part of the problem in America today when it comes to poverty is that the vast majority of everyday Americans have never met a poor person or at least never interacted with someone who was poor. That poor people are those people over there that I don't know anything about.
Sure.
It sounds to me like you've had some personal interactions,
definitely,
that would get past that barrier.
Definitely.
So what I'm wondering about is what you learned about people who maybe, for many other Americans, have been those people. Those people that I don't know. Those people that I have some ideas about, some suppositions about why they are poor or how they are different than me because they are poor. I don't know, Joe, if you carried those kinds of ideas with you up until the time that you started working with people who were poor. But since you didn't grow up poor, I am curious what you felt you got from the time you spent with people whose circumstances were so much different than your own.
I mean, I think the most important thing, Tom, is the diversity in this group of people that we're talking about. I would never want to generalize about any of them, and I don't think Vino, the guest who called in earlier, would want us to do that. They all have very different ambitions. They sometimes grow up in different forms of households in very different places across the country. I don't think that we want to think about them as motivated by a certain desire or by a lack of motivation. I think that they all have.
And again, I'm asking for your personal experience. Can you told us, sure, a little bit about Josh and Tyler? Can you tell us about anybody else that you met who, by getting to know them, something was revealed to you that you didn't maybe understand before?
Sure. Well, I think by working in the housing issue in Rockbridge County, I was really made aware of the typical everyday struggles that you can face when you are in poverty. And possibly, if you don't have access to a car, the accumulation of groceries, of food and access to medical care can be a very difficult task. Recently Rockbridge County installed a transportation system that has alleviated this issue somewhat. But in talking to individuals in the community who didn't have access to transportation before this, you realize that some of the struggles that they encounter might seem to us to be minimal, but really, the walk to the healthcare clinic, which can be, 30, 40 minutes away, can be a very difficult task. And so you find that the daily struggle of poverty is something that is very difficult for those who aren't living in it to understand. And I wouldn't claim to understand it myself, having not lived in poverty fully, but I think that the program has definitely given me a much deeper perspective on it.
One of the reasons we have the Shepherd Program has an internship is to get students beyond the classroom so that they actually rub shoulders with people who face the circumstances of poverty. And one of the things they inevitably find is how diverse the people are, how they have different interests. Some are not motivated. Some are angry. Some are courageous. Our students will inevitably come back from these experiences talking about how courageous certain people are or how generous certain people are.
Or how similar they are to themselves.
And how similar they are to themselves. I'll tell you a story about that. One of our students graduated a few years ago, went to medical school and moved to San Francisco, where she's involved in a residency, and she belongs to a church there where she participated in the Christian practice of washing feet. And one day she was washing the feet of a gentleman in the San Francisco area, and they began to talk about where he was from. He said, "Well, I'm from here, but I went out east to school to a little bitty town in Virginia." She said, "Well, I'm from a little town in Virginia, and I went to school in a little town in Virginia." She's from Houston. He said, "Yeah, well, you've never heard of that town. The town I went to was Lexington." And she said, "Oh, yes, I've heard of that town. That's the place where I went." And he said, "Well, I went to that school, and I stayed for 2 years, and I left and had difficulty, and here I am, and now I'm homeless." And so they had a meeting, and she said she was taken aback by how much they had in common, and they started in the same place, and his life took a different turn from her own. And now he was trying to turn his life around. So what does she learn from that? She learns that there ought to be organizations that provide this gentleman who retains a lot of dignity and a certain amount of self-respect to remove some of the barriers to his own flourishing in life and to succeed in life. And for her, that's important as a member of a church. It's important as a physician, and she will conduct her healthcare practice differently and her civic life and her religious life differently because of that experience. That's what we want to achieve in the Shepherd Program.
Harlan Beckley, we're going to run out of time soon. I want to go back to what you were telling us at the very beginning of the hour about the degree to which, on most all measures, the U.S. ranks near the bottom when it comes to poverty, when it comes to access to health care that could help people get out of poverty. When it comes to those countries in the developed world that rank near the top, and I'm guessing that we're talking about countries like Germany and Switzerland and the Netherlands and Iceland, based on things I've heard from you before.
Scandinavian countries, of course.
What are they doing that we are not? And are they doing things that you'd like to see us try here in the U.S.?
Well, I think the biggest thing they're doing we're not is they all have universal health care. And it costs them a lot less money as a percentage of their GDP than our healthcare system costs us, and it produces a lot better outcomes in health, and the outcomes are distributed more equally throughout the population. They also have less of a gap in their education system between the lower and higher SES families. And
SES is?
Socioeconomic status.
Okay.
Measuring both social and economic status in determining
so
whether somebody's
higher.
So in
these countries, it's much easier to get medical care, and it's much easier to get a quality education.
And it's increasingly possible that people are mobile, meaning they can move from one income level to other income levels in those societies. And those possibilities, as Joe mentioned earlier, are less likely in the U.S. than they were some decades ago. Now, having said that, I think it's important that we recognize we have some successes in the United States as well. The most recent supplemental poverty measurements by the Department of Congress, the Census Bureau, I mean Commerce, the Census Bureau, shows, for example, that our program and earned income tax credit, which is only for working families with mostly with children, has reduced our poverty rate by a full 2 percentage points from what would have been 18% down to 16%.
So we've got less than 30 seconds left. Anything else you most
want
to say?
So we need to continue to support and use those programs that increase opportunities and possibility for people to flourish.
Our guests have been Joe Landry, a rising senior at Washington and Lee University, and Harlan Beckley, who directs the program that Joe and many other college students across the country have been using to increase their understanding of poverty, the Shepherd Program for the Interdisciplinary Study of Poverty and Human Capability. Harlan, Joe, thank you both so much for making time for us.
And thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jusbay and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.